This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. The COVID-19 crisis has completely disrupted our lives. As at this morning, there are about 3,116 cases in Malaysia. When will this crisis end? Are we fighting it effectively? We speak with Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, the former Minister of Health and now head of the COVID-19 Task Force in Selangor. Thank you for taking time off your busy schedule to speak with us. With more people going to be tested, maybe 16,000 a day, we can expect more new cases. How far are we from flattening the curve?
Going into the second phase of MCO, and everyone is really looking at those plots done by MIR. Looking at it at face value, it's like flattening, although we have not reached the peak as yet. And I think that is a reason to take a bit of consolation, but never to let our guard down, though. I hasten to add to the fact that we don't really quite understand, you know, which one is this that we are testing. Because there seems to be a backlog. Or are they from the PUIs, meaning they are the patient under investigation based on their contact tracing? That we need to plot to do other plot like the log plot, but generally there is a decrease trend overall.
A rough guess, what do you think will be our peak number?
Yeah, I know JP Morgan came out with 6,000, right, and then a bit higher. Let's hope we can get it lowered. No one really knows, what exactly and how this, when is it going to take a turn and whatnot. You know, these are all simulation modeling. We are using the SEIR, the SEIR modeling. And, you just got to plow on and do what is most important during this MCO is to, keep doing more tests, more identification, more isolation, more quarantine, and more treatment. I think that's the only way you get to really be on the ball and be on guard and keep doing the right thing.
Selangor has by far the most COVID-19 cases, and this is because of our population size?
The disease is, in fact, is also a function of population density, besides, of course, vulnerability of subpopulation like the extreme of ages, children, and the old age, above 60, and other things like, existing underlying diseases like comorbidities of hypertension, diabetes, and whatnot in your population. So, given the fact that Selangor is the most densely populated, and the recent numbers are showing that Selangor, despite having 704 cases in Selangor, going by per 100,000, there's only 10.8, And in contrast to federal territory, like in KL, though they have 430, but going by per 100,000 population, they are a lot higher, like 24.1. Incidentally, Putrajaya, who has got only 26 cases, came out to be 25.1 cases per 100,000, by the way. Sabah, which has got 206, is half of Selangor's incidence, where they come up to about 5.3% per 100,000.
Why are certain areas like Lembah Pantai and Hulu Langat recording such high numbers? Is this something to do with social economic conditions, density? And what I know, Hulu Langat has a high number of people who are against vaccination, for example.
This is a new, totally novel and new virus. And it's nothing to do with, anti-vax kind of tendencies or whatever. As you very well know, that this exposure to this particular SARS-CoV-2, the virus is, would elicit antibodies formation, whether it's IgG or IgM. Yeah. And as you also know that by now, that 80% of those exposed do not really come down with any kind of a severe, much less critical conditions. There may be, many who are infected already.
Is this linked in some ways to socio-economic conditions as well?
Socio-economic may be directly related to one's immuno you know, whether one is immunologically vibrant or immunologically compromised. If you live in the PPRT, like all those flats, yeah, and of course they are from the lower income group, and certainly and surely they will be the most susceptible, high risk, vulnerable subpopulation. I'm very sure, you know, because that has got to do with the function of one's immuno status.
Several hospitals have actually approached the media to help raise funds for themselves to procure medical gear, PPE, personal protective gear. And I would think that procurement should be centralised via the Ministry of Health. Why do now individual hospitals, why are they having to raise funds on their own and not tapping on the Ministry of Health?
I must be, you know, honest and upright and upfront about this. So, yeah, why in the first place do you allow this thing to degenerate to this extent? I call for a central coordinating committee, you know, either overseen by any agencies for that matter, NADMA, to oversee this procurement and more importantly distribution. You know, distribution resulted in this, you know, dire strait condition of hospital, especially those the remote one, where you see all this sorry state of our frontliners, doctors, nurses. So yes, I've come to know of NGOs and CSOs, you know, civil society organizations like, you know, Imarat and others are purchasing this themselves. And, you know, philanthropists, donors, you know, also willing to donate. They are not properly managed, much less organized. So, yes, I call for a central coordinating committee immediately to be put in place so that we get this, you know, we stop all this, you know, cry for help kind of thing, because we are not doing it right. And I must impress on the urgency and the importance of this to be handled sooner.
So some insiders tell me this is red tape. That's why hospitals are now just going and just taking matters into their own hands to just get the money and get the gear and the equipment and even sourcing for suppliers themselves. And another version I get is that because some of these supplies still have to be ordered through so-called third-party companies that have been approved earlier, and some say, oh, because it's crony companies, it comes with high margins. So this is one version I'm also listening to. And then also another version, because some of these hospitals are like UMMC, they are actually under the Ministry of Education. Yeah. So they don't come under Ministry of Health and they don't get so much funding from Ministry of Health.
Neil, I must say this, you know, I must interject you on that. You know, in this crisis situation where crisis management is required, you know, we could no longer work in silos by way of what ministries, is your jurisdiction, is my turf, whatever. We have got to already galvanize the entire government ministries and agencies, what WHO called the whole of government approach, and synchronize, work with other non-governmental agencies or organizations. So that would be a whole of society's approach. You know, we must have that openness, transparency, and as well willingness to allow others to come on board. You know, I must say that, you know, with all due respect to MOH, maybe most of their resources and or rather their officers are already firefighting round the clock, you know, overburdened, you know, overstressed, you know, but others, you know, other agencies, other ministries, you know, whether be the, you know, the KDN or even, you know, those involved in purchasing, why can, you know, those domestic trade, KDP and AGPs, and even, you know, everyone must come, you know, to contribute, because under NADMA, the National, you know, Disasters Management Agency, that should be that platform, you know, earlier in the earlier period, you know, look overseen and chaired by the Deputy Prime Minister, those time in our time, you know, it was at least effectively orchestrated and managed. And I'm beginning to see that all this incoordination is essentially because of a lack of a central coordinating committee.
Given that Selangor has the highest number of cases, can your task force, Selangor task force, at least, you know, be the central body for the state, for your hospitals in your state?
Honestly, you know, with all due respect, we came in initially to just be advising, doing troubleshooting and think-tanking for the Chief Minister, for Menteri Besar. You know, by now, we already got most of it, you know, rolled out. But whether it's really getting down to the intended audience and target is something else, and help the Jabatan Kesihatan Negeri to get to doing things like, you know, community testing on a more targeted manner. We will have data, we will have geo-mapping, we will have evidence to go for micro targeting of community testing, be more, you know, guided by evidence and by information.
Today on The Breakfast Grill, I'm speaking with Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, the former Minister of Health, on handling the COVID-19 crisis.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
I'm speaking with Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, the former Minister of Health. You had mentioned that data from Putrajaya has not been forthcoming that could better assist Selangor in fighting the COVID-19 outbreak. What's the status now?
Yeah, much as we desired. Unfortunately, it is still not forthcoming as such. And I must make it very clear that it's not patient identity that we are looking for. Not at all. Yeah. That is guided and that is protected by the Medical Act. What we are looking for, in the sense of, you know, providing data for our analytics, are those COVID cases, positive COVID cases, patients rather, to be able for us to be accessible, or we get access to information like, you know, date of onset of symptoms, you know, date of admission or discharge, some case notes of what drugs and therapeutics or what antiviral drugs or whatever other drugs, you know, that are given to them. You know, some are now talking about hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, whatever. The more that we get as for this kind of data information, the better. The more granular our analytics will be. The mantra is to increase is test, you know, because right now we are not doing enough of testing. Things that we were looking for is not just for us, it's for others as well, academic researchers and think tankers group, yeah.
The Ministry of Health, I think they are indicating that they want to increase testing to about 16,000 people a day. In your view, is that enough?
Yeah, I would be glad, I would be very delighted if we get to doing that. On our part, we are only testing 0.06% of our population, by the way. 0.06% of our population. Turn out to be, as compared to others, like South Korea, with a population of slightly more than us, about 15 million, they are doing 0.7%. China, 0.1% of their 1.38 billion. Even Singapore does it higher. So with us, we are doing, there about, you know, 22,000 at one point. And now, you know, we really hope to ramp it up to as close to at least 0.1%. You know, but right now we are doing 0.06 and enhance our quality of testing. Not just quality of testing, the qualities of the numbers that we are dealing with. Although going by what WHO says that, you know, on average we must have 10% of what we test as positive, but I must also add, but we got to also, you know, comply to the fact that we got to have enough of our population, you know, to make that 10% positive be meaningful. If you don't do enough testing, of course you will, because of a lower, you know, lower numbers in your denominator, you certainly get higher positive cases. So that is also not very good. We have got to, you know, target who are we testing. We got to go for the asymptomatic person, people who have got contacts, although they have got contact, but they are not tested. So we could be missing. I was told that as of yesterday there were 7,000 pending testing outcomes. Yeah, and as well, I must say again, testing must be done on all those cases that are quite unlinked to clusters, meaning particularly over the sporadic cases. And this data is not, again, shared. It's very unfortunate that it's, again, not informed to, analysts, to those who are doing research. We'll get to better quality outcome.
WHO is saying that the number of cases in Malaysia may peak in mid-April, and which is actually nicely when this would be perhaps the end of the second phase of our MCO. But do you think it's realistic to end by mid-April?
Well, you know what MCOs bring to the people. It's just not about, restricting movement of people, without the concomitant and inadvertent consequences or adverse consequences on their livelihood, their quality of life, much less, how it, how it impacts them on their, just not economics, but as well the social, psychosocial impact on family and relationships, mental challenges, domestic violence to those in the authority, if ever they are mulling and mooting the idea of extending their of the MCOs, is to really understand what they should be doing during this period I call buying time or the respite they have. If that is the projection of a trajectory of middle April to be a lot worse than now, the government has to come face to face with this eventuality and probability that they must go back to the drawing board and plan it well in terms of coordination, in terms of resources, in terms of mobilization, distribution, in terms of the screening that has got to be, that's got to be ramped up, and as well, always looking into the capacity and capability of our health facilities, especially the hospital that are now taking and is not dedicated to COVID-19 cases or patients. So, yes, you can't rule out the possibility of another extension after 15 April, but I wouldn't want to just, give that kind of, blank check to any authority without them really fully, strategically and tactfully plan that kind of regime, because it's the far-reaching effect and impact, both economic and social, on families, especially the lower income groups, are really, devastating, and as well other things. So it has to continue flattening the epic curve and reducing mortality. We are doing well earlier, but now from 0.6% on CFR, the case fatality rate, we are now almost like 1.4, 1.5. Soon it's going to be increased. The global parameter on CFR is almost like 4.4%. So are we going to be witnessing more mortality, more deaths? You see more deaths as well on the non-COVID cases. And how many of surgery or elective surgery perhaps that has been deferred? What death numbers it is just now, we are counting. And let's not talk about, the third MCOs or any extension before we get to address the predicament and the agony and the sufferings of the people right now.
On a personal level, you've earned a lot of praise prior to COVID-19 and then also for the handling of the outbreak before you resigned as Minister of Health. And obviously, this country needs moral leadership. And it seems like many people see that you have some Prime Minister material. What's your response to that?
Well, it makes me really uncomfortable, to be commended for, for our rather than mine alone. You know, it was always me working with the DG and the top management, with the deputy DG of public health. I provide the strategic kind of direction. They provide the technical and the tactician, but it has always been a team, right? So I must say that we somehow lost that. Yeah, the DG, as the DG, Director General of MOH, is now taking it all. And it's so important to have what I call as, you know, check and balance and the dissenting voice that must always, you know, check the minister or even the DG for that matter. You know, no one of us is better than all of us. So this is what I think is what is needed in MOH and anywhere else in the ministry of leadership. So whoever takes over, this is what we would hope to get from them. I got to work within an environment and a cabinet and a leadership that I can, you know, identify with. So, yeah, but it's unfortunate that we are not seeing it. Hopefully, we're going to be seeing it soon. Otherwise, you know.
The big picture question, moving out of the Ministry of Health, do you think you could potentially bring this strategic and kind of skills and also building a team to, you know, running a country?
Not politically ambitious, Neil. I want to be part of the team that will bring Malaysia, you know, as a nation that will be, you know, recognized, celebrated as one. Terus disanjungi in our, in the lyric of our lagu Malaysia Bersih. Like other colleague of mine in the former cabinet, we have all vision and the passion, you know, to be a semula negara. So this is what we wanted to do. But somehow, you know, these things happen. The rakyat must now, you know, be able to be honest about analyzing and honest about assessing and evaluating us. So let's hope that moving forward, we'll get to see some silver lining and get to see a reform being embarked. And we'll see how it goes.
If there is an opportunity or a chance down the road of becoming Prime Minister, would that be something you would consider?
Well, Neil, again, I'm a reluctant politician. I've never, you know, been to be or to be assuming that kind of role in my beloved country. And I always wanted to be an advisor to the Prime Minister, not the Prime Minister myself. Because you've got to be smarter than the Prime Minister to be an advisor to the Prime Minister. That's my last word.
Why would you prefer to be advisor and not the Prime Minister?
No, that's a tough question. I know the buck stops at the Prime Minister. So I'll do the troubleshooting. I'll do the thinking. And let's get the one that has got the passion to execute it.
What's your political future and that of Pakatan Harapan?
Ever since the 24th of February, my last day in MOH, what I call as where time stood still, insofar as, you know, our reforms are concerned, it has been, honestly, it has been distressing. It has been devastating to some of my colleagues. I know of them, you know, whether they are deputy ministers or ministers themselves. But when I look close to the eyes of the people, I believe that they have the conviction that, you know, one day we will return and bounce back. How it happened, that's God's design. And we have got to do our best. And we'll cross the bridge when we come to it. If there is no bridge, we'll build one.
Thank you so much for speaking with us and all the best. Datuk Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, the former Minister of Health. I'm Noel Lim at BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, encouraging you to stay home during this period of movement control.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.